Hello and welcome back to the Extra Movie Butter Podcast. This week we are joined by the Australian Arizonian himself, Mr. Jacob London. How are you, good sir?
I'm good. Yeah, it's good to be here. I'm now, both Australian and Arizonian. I'm not exactly 100% sure what I am anymore. I know that this is now home, and I'm very glad to be here. It's been 9 months. I've been in America 9 months, and which is bizarre to say.
I feel Australia, Arizona, a little similar. A lot of desert. A lot of barren land. Does it feel a little bit like home?
It does. It feels more when I go to LA. California, LA, that's where I grew up. That weather, coastal town. I grew up in a very coastal town, where all the theme parks are, where all the beaches are. So that's where I grew up, which is ironic because I don't ever go to the beach or I hate it. I mean, just look at the complexion of my skin. I'm very white.
It's an audio-only podcast. They can't.
but when I go to California, that's when I feel home. But I also do love it here because I'm also very much used to the heat. Brisbane and the Gold Coast gets very hot, so it's about a comp here, and it's not as humid here as it is over there, so I'm loving that.
Quick question: what is the Australian Academy Awards? Do they have an award show of some sort?
We do. No one cares. or the actor, ACCTA, and it's in like I've watched I think three of them in my entire life, and I couldn't tell you anything that happens in them. Generally, it's they'll generally do smaller movies that no one ever saw or talked about. Like they don't, it's not like the BAFTA where it's, oh, we are going to grab the American movies. We are going to really do that. It's no, we're only focusing on the Australian movies. Now, sometimes, especially recently, where those bigger movies have been co-productions with Australia. So like when Great Gatsby came out, Great Gatsby was like one of the biggest movies Australia's ever had. And that movie was that movie was nominated for so many things. And everyone was like, why didn't it get any Oscar nominations?
How many times has Paul Hogan hosted the Academy Awards out there?
Paul Hogan is banned from Australia, right?
What?
Tax evasion.
What do you do?
Tax evasion.
Tax evasion, dude.
Hasn't paid his taxes.
Is it the whole...
He lives in the United States, if I'm not mistaken.
He should fit right in. Isn't it all, former criminals? You should become mayor.
Fucking 300 years ago, JT. Jesus.
Exactly. You got to keep the traditions alive. He's a true Australian.
Oh, wow.
Love Paul Hogan.
Australia does not.
Lightning Jack. One of Moose's favorite movies.
There it is. Not one of my favorite movies. I just said that was a movie I watched a lot when I was a kid.
Is a fan. I didn't really
actually grow up on many Paul. Like, I didn't grow up on a lot of the Australian movies that everyone's like. Like, I watched Crocodile Dundee maybe once in my entire life when I was about 12.
Oh man, part one and two. I used to have like the double DVD, VHS, all that. I used to watch all that.
I could not tell you anything that happens in two. I think I've seen two maybe once in my life, and it was when it was on TV. I've seen LA. A few times.
That's the one I've seen the least.
Because it was on TV a lot.
Like Tyson, yeah.
Yeah, so I've seen LA, but yeah, two, I could not tell you anything about.
Part two, he throws a knife into a guy's mohawk. It's pretty awesome. Benny, does Benny remember?
Valdez breaks off the antenna from the limo and throws it at a guy.
I believe that's part two.
Okay,
Benny, I need Benny here. I feel like he must know the Crocodile D films like the back of his hand.
I know the first two exceptionally well. I do not know the third one at all.
Yeah,
and I would also like to shout out Shrimp on the Barbie, Australia's greatest cultural contribution, other than Young Einstein.
Yeah, and the Simpsons episode where Bart goes to Australia is one of the best.
It is
one of the best episodes.
It is. It is definitely one of the best episodes.
Agreed. All right. Well, this is the
before Jacob gives JTE and Benny a good booting, let's go through some box office numbers before we celebrate the Oscars that occurred last night, folks. So, of course, we do this every week. We're going to go through the box office numbers. We're going to go round table. You guys are going to give me your thoughts, general impressions of the box office. Coming in at number one over the weekend was Kung Fu Panda 4, released with $57 million, knocking Dune Part 2 out of the number one spot, which came in with $46 million, $157 million domestic so far for Dune 2. Number three was Krasinski's new movie. Wait, no, Imaginary's not Krasinski's movies, right?
No, that's
That's If.
Yeah, that's If. Okay. This is the Blumhouse slow budget.
Oh, shit. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. The creepy fucking teddy bear. All right. Well, Imaginary came in pretty strong, actually, with $9.9 million at number three. Cabrini came in number four, $7.1 million. Bob Marley, One Love, fifth place, $4 million. Mm. Ordinary Angels, sixth place, $1.9 million. JT's Love of Hillary Swank. Still on display out there, folks. Mm-hmm. Number seven, Madam Web. I love the shots taken at Madam Web last night in the Oscars. Yeah. Number seven, with $1.1 million, Migration, YOLO, and Chosen Season 4. That Chosen Season 4, is episode Beekeeper, 7 and 8.
Beekeeper out of the top 10?
So it's kind of a weird like asterisk because these all are less than $1 million. So Beekeeper made $394 million over the weekend, which somehow still made it into the top 10 because it's not really quite ranking these in 7, 8, 9. So
did you say 394 million?
I think you meant
394,000.
That's like the Beekeep is back on, baby.
Jesus. Right. I hope the Hive isn't being that protected because that movie was atrocious. But Jacob, you're our guest. You've heard some numbers, buddy. Tell us what those numbers tell you, my friend.
So I do find it hilarious that you, when you're like Imaginary, that's John Krasinski's If movie, right? And and like you will, you know, and you're like, oh, that's actually a pretty good number for it. For the Blumhouse Imaginary horror movie, $9 million is actually a pretty good number. If opens to $9 million, John Krasinski might not have a career again. Like,
yeah, good call.
How different, like, just that figure would end up being for different movies. I just found that funny. Look, Kung Fu Panda 4 doing the numbers it did. We're going to get Kung Fu Panda 5. It's coming. I'd be prepared. Even though I still need to see it. I still need to see 3 as well, actually. The most impressive part for me was Dune's only having a 44% drop. That's huge. That is absolutely huge for a massive massive blockbuster. And a movie that opened, you know, it's not like it opened small, like it opened to $90 million. It's all there and about. It's pretty big to only drop 44%. So I think that's a very big deal.
Yeah, at the moment, Dune Part 2 sits at $367 million worldwide. Now, Jacob, you've seen one movie in theaters this year, but how many times have you seen it?
Oh, well, no, I've seen a few movies. I've seen other movies in theaters. Just in the last like 2 weeks, I've seen one movie in theater, and it was Dune. I've seen it I've seen it twice so far, and I'm seeing it a third time tomorrow.
Nice.
So. And did you not like it as much as the first?
No, I don't think it's as good as the first. I think the first is incredible. I think this one is.
It's very interesting.
Very good, and I have problems, especially with the first hour.
I had problems with the first film. We're on like opposite sides here. Like I remember the first one being really like, I remember it just being very cold and yeah, I was, and it's just funny that we're just on the different pages.
No, this one, the problems I have with this one are a lot of the same problems with the book. But I think the last 15 minutes of this movie are some of the best filmmaking I've seen all year. Like in years. And I think, and I have a weird relationship with Dune because a lot of my problems with it clearly can't be that big of a problem because I get emotional at the end of the movie. And it's like, well, hang on. One of my big problems is I don't connect between Chaney. I don't connect the relationship. Like the relationship doesn't quite work for me as well, but I'm clearly devastated at the end of that movie. Like there's things like that, and it's just like I can't explain why, but yeah. So that's me with Dune Part 2, but yeah.
So made $300 million worldwide. I mean, it needs to make a little bit more money than that. What are the budget on this thing? I feel like
it was 200.
So it needs to make like $600 million.
So the interesting thing about Dune, and has been Part 1. Obviously, when Part 1 came out, America was still going through COVID, and so was the rest of the world. But it released also on HBO Max. That didn't happen for the rest of the world. So what you're finding is the overseas numbers for Dune Part 2 are basically in line with Dune Part 1. Like, they're not that different. It's the US numbers that have been massively different. Like that. So it's just kind of telling you what, one, the US didn't handle COVID amazingly, and the HBO Max, HBO Max decision of putting everything on there really did impact the box office for it. So,
yeah, and I think adding Florence Pugh, Austin Butler, like the cast was really stacked this time around, even more so than the first one. I'm curious to see where it ends up ultimately. There's definitely some competition. You got Ghostbusters and Godzilla X Kong coming out, so it's got to squeeze some money out before it goes.
The premium seating is going to be the big interesting part. Are we going to see what happened with Oppenheimer, where obviously you had other movies coming in, like Blue Beetle came out, I think 3 weeks after Oppenheimer did, and within a week they kicked it out because they wanted to put Oppenheimer back in IMAX.
Right?
Could we see the same thing happen with Ghostbusters and Godzilla, where they're just like, get them out? They're not doing as well as Dune is in IMAX. Like, Dune might not do great non-IMAX, because you're seeing people, like, you're seeing sold out sessions for 3 a.m. in the morning because people want to go see it in 70 mil IMAX. So that's going to be the interesting part coming forward in the next 2 weeks.
Interesting. And Kung Fu Panda, I think right around COVID, they did an animated series for Netflix, and Jack Black actually came back and voiced the character Po, which is rare. A lot of times when there's an animated TV show from like the movie, it's a totally different voice cast. But the fact they got Jack Black to come and do the animated show on Netflix, I think probably helped introduce it to another generation of young audiences, which shows why this part 4 is one of the biggest of the whole series for the opening.
This weekend,
yeah. Even
because the Megamind movie came out this weekend, and that's got no one from the original.
Yeah, nobody from there.
Nobody's from the original. So I agree with Jacob, though. I do think we're not done seeing Po theatrically. I think those are great numbers for Kung Fu Panda to be released to. I think that thing will have legs over the next couple of weeks, because really your competition is Dune, Ghostbusters, and Godzilla. You're probably going to get the kids to go see Godzilla or Ghostbusters, one of the two. But for the smaller kids, you're going to continue to go take them to see Kung Fu Panda. So I absolutely think we're going to continue to see Jack Black in that role. And, I mean, look, it's an easy paycheck for actors to take on these, you know, these recorded roles, these vocal roles. And so why wouldn't you just continue to pad that paycheck if you can? Take all the animated movies you could possibly get if I were an actor.
Yeah, especially during COVID. I see why wouldn't Jack Black do it? They set up a booth in your house. You don't even have to go to a studio to record. They do it over Zoom. These days, it's just like, I've heard people for Pixar movies would record lines on their iPhone, send it to the producer and director, and they would clean it up and put it in a movie. It's crazy.
Simpsons does that. That's how Simpsons is still doing their
really
show completely. Like, it's that's their, it's with Simpsons, it's just get us to it as quickly. Like, they do one take as quickly as they can to just get them the line. And that's why, yeah, it's a lot of Simpsons at the moment is not great. I mean, the original announcement of Kung Fu Panda was they wanted to do 6 movies. Like, that's Katzenberg's has been saying 6 movies since the second one came out, was we're doing six. Then 3 came out, and then they took a little bit of a break. And then this one was like, hey, we're kind of semi rebooting it. So we'll see.
So after those 6, when do you think we're going to get the live action Kung Fu Panda? And then who are we going to be fan cast? I mean, it's got to be Jack Black. playing just the voice live again. Action role of Poe, right?
Yeah, but I just think we're voicing, getting the live action version of Kung Fu Panda.
He's furry enough. Look at that guy. Mm-hmm. Like, come on. He already
it's Beverly Hills Ninja. We've already gotten that movie.
I will admit, I have had this week Jack Black version of Hit Me Baby One More Time playing way too many times. I've played that song way too many times for how good it is.
Nice. Well, any final thoughts, gentlemen, before we move away from the box office and move on to Hollywood's big night?
Let's talk about it, man. Let's get to the Oscars.
Jumping right in. Jimmy Kimmel hosting for yet another time. Let's start there. So, Jimmy Kimmel hosting, got his opening monologue, goes for 13 minutes. We get a little flash between each of the Best Picture nominees as he finishes it up with sitting next to Barbie on a bench. Your guys' thoughts on Jimmy Kimmel's opening monologue, how the show kicked off, good, bad, overall good vibe with Kimmel, not liking it, kind of a miss for him, a good hit. What do you guys think?
I think Jimmy just showed what he is. He's a veteran when it comes to hosting the Oscars at this point. He might not be the highest of the highs, like, you know, some of the great hosts like Billy Crystal and, you know, some of the others that you think back in the day. But he's good. Like, he makes you feel comfortable. He makes you feel at home. His jokes, listen, the jokes are always going to be hit or miss almost every year. It just comes up to, like, what his room of writers come up with. Some of the jokes are funny. You know, they're passable. But for the most part, to me, it's not so much was he funny. It was more about is he confident and keeps the show going and feels like he's in a driver's seat. And I feel like at this point he could do that with his eyes closed. I think he's just a really good host who's going to get the job done. And, you know, if there's an emergency, kind of like when, you know, the big Best Picture snafu, I thought he handled that really well. Nothing like that happened this Oscars night, but he did a good job. I think he is somebody who is going to get the job done and make you feel comfortable. He made you feel familiar. Because I think when they did the three hosts last year, was it? It felt no, just – was it last year? When was it the three? Back. How long? Who was last year? Was there any even a host last year?
I think there was.
Was it Kip? I remember they did one at the Grand Station, which was awful. That was the year Soderbergh, I think, directed. The one with Wanda Sykes, that was the Will Smith year.
Yeah,
that was Wanda. I thought that felt disjointed, and didn't feel like anybody had their hand on the steering wheel. So,
yeah, last year was also Kimmel again.
Kimmel. Yeah, I think he did a good job this year. I think he did a good job last year. So, to me, it's somebody who is going to get the job done and makes you feel like you're in good hands. So, that's my opinion.
I think I was a little harsh on Twitter last night when I said train wreck. It wasn't a train wreck.
Wait, hold on. Are you talking about the Oscars overall or just his hosting?
It was more Oscars overall in the context of when so we'll get to it later, but my best comp for it, I'll bring it up later where the context of the tweet was, but I did not like Kimmel's hosting job in this for the majority of it. I thought I was a bit harsh in Trainwreck. I'll admit it wasn't a train wreck, but it wasn't particularly good. I didn't think many of the jokes landed. I'll admit I did appreciate he didn't do so many bits. So I did appreciate that. But I think my biggest problem with Jimmy, with Kimmel as a host has always been his, for lack of a better word, like superiority to it all. Like, as in, there is obviously an element of silliness to all of this. This is millionaires giving other millionaires golden statues. Like, there is an element of silliness to the Academy Awards. But the way Kimmel hosts and talks about them is like, why do people love these? And I kind of, it just doesn't work for me, a lot of his type of humor, where it's just, it comes across as very dismissive and very like, oh, this is all silly and stupid. And there's an inherentness to that with the Academy Awards. But I think there does also need to be the reverence. And I don't think he nails that aspect of it. That being said, I do think there were moments where that he did extremely well. Calling out, like, I thought the joke about Greta Gerwig, you know, calling out Greta Gerwig not nominated, and then everyone clapping and saying, why are you all clapping? You're the ones who didn't nominate.
Right.
Like, I thought that was a great, great joke. And then bringing out all the crew, I think yes. was an important, brilliant moment, knowing we're about to go through this again. And there is a there is fear that we could have our third strike and another industry shutdown. So I think that was a really great moment for him to be like, no, bring out the crew, because these guys are just as important as what we all went through. I thought that was a really great moment for them, but I didn't like the Robert Downey Jr. joke. Even though I know he was clearly game for it, it didn't land for me. I thought it was like, I don't love that. And then same with like the animated stuff like that he did. Like there was a lot of those sort of things where it's just like, you coming off as snobbish. And it just didn't work for me.
Yeah, the Downey Jr. Joke didn't really, and you know, a lot of these actors, actresses, like they're in on these jokes. They ran through them in advance because they're obviously going to have a camera shoved directly into their face at the moment that, you know, the punchline comes out. That was weird. That was kind of like flogging a horse 10 years ago. You know, I didn't understand that. Like, this is Robert Downey Jr.'s like peak moment right now. Like, I think all of us unanimously could have said, like, walking into this, like, if there was one sure bet on who was going to win an Oscar tonight, it was going to be RDJ. I mean, his performance in Oppenheimer was just a powerhouse. And so, like, this is the pinnacle of this guy's like comeback career over the last, you know, 20 years. And that was just kind of, it just felt like a cheap little like, joke. Again, Downey played it cool. Like, he had kind of a fun little back and forth, like, okay, move on. But yeah, I don't know. It didn't sit well for me. I like Kimball. I agree with a lot of what you said. Like, the jokes are kind of tailored for the people in the room. Like the Yorgos joke, you know, again, like, this is really tailored to like these celebrities who are in the room that just happen to have, you know, 50 million people tuning in additionally. But there were some bits that I thought worked really, really well. I actually laughed my ass off with the John Cena bit. I thought that was funny. It was kind of a weird moment for him to like harken back to the streaker. And I was like, I expected it to be like Jimmy Kimmel's like security guard to come running out, you know, in some capacity. But I thought it was funny with the way that they played it off and the way that Cena like physically walked out on stage, like the way that he was just kind of shuffling. It worked for me. I thought one of the best, like the funniest, like best shticks of the night was when we got Arnold and Danny DeVito. And they were up there together and it just flashes to Keaton and you hear Arnold go, you son of a bitch. And Keaton's just stoic as Batman. He's just got the Batman look looking at those guys. That was my favorite part of the evening. Like bar none.
Highlight of the night.
Yes, absolutely.
Highlight like, of the night.
That shtick worked perfectly for me.
Well, Keaton just sold that look so well. And then he did the little fingers like bring it on. Like I was like jumping out of my seat like that's Batman. That is Batman. That's what I was saying. I want to hear some of Benny's thoughts here.
Yeah.
I think Jimmy Kimmel is tepid water in a lukewarm room. And like that, that's where he can go to. That's his range. Like, you know, he's not going to come out on stage and just start dropping racial slurs and do cocaine on the stand. But he's also not going to give you anything really memorable, in my opinion. And Jimmy Kimmel does what he does. He does a generic late night TV show shtick. And then we move on to the next famous person. That's what he can give. That's what he gave.
If we're talking about other presenting moments in the night, I'll get to then because so to me, the moment where like what the thing that made me tweet out, this show has been a train wreck, was when Mulaney came out and did his presentation and did the 5-minute speech of and did the Field of Dreams bit. And it this isn't as bad. I don't want to say last night was as bad as when Anne Hathaway and James Franco did it, but it reminded me of that in that, I don't know if you remember in that show, but halfway through, Billy Crystal came out just randomly. Like, Billy Crystal wasn't presenting. He just came out, gave a five-minute speech, and walked off. And it felt like this moment of, oh, good, the real host is here, the one who's giving the calming presence of, okay, the show's a mess. We know that. I'm kind of fixing it. And then obviously a year later, Billy Crystal hosted. I think that this felt like that kind of moment to me of, oh, Mulaney coming out and just kind of placating everyone and going, yeah, this has been a mess. I'm showing why I need to be the host next year, because that fixed it. And then obviously going straight from that to Ryan Gosling's I'm Just Ken performance, like that whole 5 minute stretch was the best part of the entire night for me. It was just absolutely brilliant. And I was an absolute highlight of the night. But yeah, like I think that's kind of where I really felt. Kimmel's best joke of the night was when he read Trump's tweet. Yeah. That was just genuinely the single greatest moment. Like that was just brilliant of just like, just straight up. I'm going to steal Fallon's bit of doing mean tweets. Like, just, yeah. But other than that, yeah, I wasn't a big fan. I wasn't a big fan of the overall presentation of the show. I the whole show was just.
Well, did you enjoy the people coming, the past nominees coming out and presenting the awards? That did give us a great Nicolas Cage moment.
No, I did enjoy that. I did like that. I thought a lot of the people who they picked were weird. The who they actually paired up, I thought was a little bit weird. But I also am like, well, they might just not have been able to get a lot of the people that you actually wanted.
Yeah, you could kind of tell, like when Sam Rockwell was presenting, like Robert Downey Jr., you could tell these guys were buds. Obviously we did Iron Man 2 together. Like they have a relationship. They know each other. And then some of the other ones were like, I admire you.
Yeah.
And that was why.
They needed someone for me. And like, you know, I love Tim Robbins. Like Tim Robbins presenting Robert De Niro, like even messing up the thing, but like he's got no connection to Robert De Niro. Like, right. You know, so it's things like that where it's like, okay. That sort of thing, but the whole show felt unrehearsed and kind of messy. Like we can get to Al Pacino's thing at the end where of presenting, but not only that, the in memoriam was, but I thought was really messy and badly handled. I thought,
Do you remember the last few years of the memoriam? Because I felt like the last few years have been awful, and this was the first time in like years where I was like, they actually put some effort and actual production into it.
But yeah. To defend that, like if you're in the crowd, it looked great because they had these rotating screens and moving around. But then if you're not in the crowd, if you're watching on TV like the rest of us schmucks are, like it is kind of difficult to see who is who because they are doing it from a wide angle. So they get this aesthetic. Mm. So you really had to be paying attention to these TVs. Whereas in the past, I've always felt like they've shown you on the screen what everyone else in the audience is seeing.
They've done the full screen. Like, it's things like that where it was just it felt Golden Globes-y. Felt like, oh, okay, we're kind of just being a little loose and a little too relaxed. And that's not what the Oscars has been. The Oscars has been the one that's always been very, like, takes it more seriously. Whereas in, every other award show is like that. Oh, yeah, we can be, like, you know, not rehearsed and everyone's clearly drunk. I don't know. Maybe I was just in a weird mood because it was still daylight watching it.
Yeah, I have to disagree with Jacob on this one. I felt like this felt like some of the Oscars I used to watch back when I was a kid. I felt more, but this also might be a result of the past few years feeling really disjointed and kind of a mess. This felt like it was really well put together, streamlined from beginning to end. I don't blame the show for whatever Pacino did at the end. He's an old guy. You know, he just kind of messed up there.
No, but maybe that came out. Got that better. Came out like it, that was intentional. Yeah. They weren't they weren't going to read off the nominees again or anything like that.
Which I think is fine. I totally think if you're going to show me after, you know, every commercial break, all the nominees, we all know who the nominees are. I don't think you need to have him up there read them all off. I think he could have just done a better job of pronouncing the winner. Mm. I think he just kind of said it haphazardly. People were almost like, did he say the winner? What did you just say? So I just think that was him, old age. It could have been done a little better, but
old age has nothing to do with it. It was the 7 whiskey sours he had before he came on stage. That's what gave you mispronunciation.
Al Pacino has not played some lines since the 70s, so it's all good.
There it is. So I'll just say overall, this is one of the better Oscars I think in a while. There was no controversy. I thought it was streamlined as well. It had good moments. There weren't too many montages. There weren't too many bits. I'll agree with you. There weren't, you know, I think in the past, Kimmel leaned a little bit more on the segments / bits, pranks, whatever he wanted to do. This one just felt really streamlined. It kind of reminded me of the older Oscars I used to watch when I was growing up. I don't think it's as good as those, but it felt closer to those than, say, the past few years. That's just my opinion.
I think this was the most fun I've had in the Oscars, at least in the last like 5 years. Like the last 5 years, the Oscars have just felt like a mess.
It
was fun. This felt like a mess, but it seemed like everybody was having a good time. It was flowing well. The actors were having a good time. I think people in the audience were having a good time. So at least it was flowing. At least people were having a good time. But yeah, it was a disjointed, fun mess. Benny, how about you, buddy? What did you think of the overall? And then we'll start getting into some award winners.
I think JTE's right. I think it felt like older Oscar ceremonies, but that being said, I don't enjoy older Oscar ceremonies. I just don't enjoy Oscar ceremonies. So I think he is correct. It felt like an Oscar ceremony from the 90s in a lot of ways. That's not something I enjoy, but like if you enjoyed those, I imagine this was quite a return to form.
Fair. Well, let's start off with the first winner of the night, and that was the Best Supporting Actress. Divine Joy Randolph won a Best Supporting Actress for The Holdovers. Now, your guys' thoughts on her winning. Jacob, we'll kick off with you. Did you have her? Come on, we're all pegging different actors and actresses. We all issued our predictions. Did you hit on this one?
She's one of my favorite performances of the year. I really loved The Holdovers. Like I really did love The Holdovers, and I'm really glad that it got some recognition, and her performance is phenomenal and absolutely incredible and human and heartbreaking. And so I was really glad that she won. I think in this category, I think she's the best performance out of the five. So yeah, I think she absolutely deserved the win.
So just so everyone's on the same page, Divine Joy Randolph won for The Holdovers. His competition was Emily Blunt from Oppenheimer, Danielle Brooks from The Color Purple, America Ferrera from Barbie, and Jodie Foster for Naiad. Benny, how about you? Divine Joy Randolph.
I think everyone has known since November that she was, you know, going to win this award. Like I'll say, I personally think Emily Blunt had the best individual scene out of anyone on that list in Oppenheimer when they're up on the mountain and she's yelling at him about infidelity and sin. But that being said, Divine Joy Randolph by far had the best overall performance out of all of these. And I didn't think it was in doubt, and I don't think it's been in doubt for months.
Yeah.
The Holdovers was my favorite movie of last year. I adored that movie. I came away from it and immediately said to these guys when we were talking favorites, I was like, if she doesn't win Best Supporting Actress, like there is something seriously flawed. So it was a no brainer for me. She was probably my favorite win of the evening. I loved her acceptance speech. It was great. I thought that, like you guys have all kind of touched on it, she gave the performance of a lifetime, and I honestly can't wait to see what she does next. Like, randomly the other day, like Office Christmas Party was on and she was like the security guard in that movie. And I was like, holy shit, like, boy, you've come a long way. Good for you. So, yeah, no surprise there. Thrilled she won. JT, how about you, buddy?
Yeah, like Benny said, everyone knew that she was going to win this. She won basically every award. Her and Robert Downey Jr., the supporting categories were a lock for months. It was the best actor, best actress. So everyone was like, that. Those two had some possibilities of being upset. We'll get to those. But yeah, she deserved it. She won it. Great speech. Heartfelt. You could tell she came from somebody who was probably told by some people she shouldn't even try acting. Yep. And to go from that to being, you know, an Oscar winner is a great story, and just, you know, goes to show you anybody could be, you go after your dream, you can reach it.
I just hope, like, because Best Supporting Actress has a history of, especially women of color in Best Supporting Actress, where they'll win and then they don't really do anything afterwards. Like, then they don't really, yeah, it doesn't take off their career the way you're expecting.
Monique comes to mind.
Yeah, like, so I'm really hoping that we do end up seeing her career really take off moving forward, and she is able to start getting some more roles, and we do see, because she's an incredibly talented actress, and I'm really glad that I'm really hoping that we do actually see more of her.
I agree. I think speaks to a larger problem in Hollywood. But that's a whole other podcast.
This isn't
I get what you're saying. Yeah. I totally get what you're saying. Like, there's a lot of actresses. I was talking about Hilary Swank, who's won 2 Best Actress nominees, and then hasn't had like a leading role in forever.
Well, like Monique won an Oscar, and I don't think I've ever seen a movie Monique's done ever since Precious. Like, she's just not in movies. And it's things like that where it's just, yeah.
So you guys touched on it. I'll bring it up. Robert Downey Jr., since we're on Best Supporting, let's talk about Best Supporting Actress, right? RDJ wins. He beats out Sterling K. Brown for American Fiction, Bobby De Niro for Killers of the Flower Moon, Ryan Gosling for Barbie, and Mark Ruffalo for Poor Things. This was a no-brainer for me. I said it earlier. I knew after watching Oppenheimer that RDJ was going to win Best Supporting Actor. Although I will say, after having seen Poor Things recently, I did think Ruffalo was going to give him a bit of a chase. I thought Ruffalo could have been the wild card winner if he pulled out that win, because he was great. Think what you will about Poor Things, but like, you can't deny what him and Emma Stone did in that movie. So... RDJ, and I'm thrilled to have it. And it, honestly, when he's giving his award speech, when he's getting up, when he's turning around, when he's given the peace symbol, like, people who think that he created the character of Tony Stark for the MCU are absolutely wrong. Robert Downey Jr. showed up as Robert Downey Jr. and they just labeled him Tony Stark. Like, you see how much of himself he pours into that character. Tony Stark was up there accepting that award. And his speech was great. It was it was funny, but then it was also heartfelt. Like, it just kind of shows like his transition, his thank you to his wife about being a veterinarian and taking him on as this just savage dog and loving him back to life. Like, it was a great tribute. I'm thrilled for Robert Downey Jr. Love the guy. It just goes to show, like, this dude can put out incredible performances. Like, he's one of the talents of our generation. So I'm very happy for him.
Yeah, I watched Oppenheimer the night before the Oscars because I hadn't seen it since theaters. And I just wanted to give it a rewatch because everybody knew it was going to win Best Picture. We all knew Robert Downey Jr. was going to win Best Supporting. So watching it again the night before, you know, I really liked the movie. It was in my top 5 of the year, but he really does stand out, I think, on second viewing more than he did on the first viewing, because especially in the last, you know, 45 minutes of the film. He really kind of steals the movie away from, you know, Cillian Murphy. So, well-deserved. It's one of those career Oscars. It's right time. He's paid his dues. Great Hollywood story. So, couldn't be happier. And he gave me a speech just as I would expect him to. Touching at times, funny, crass. It checked all the boxes. So, yeah. Real happy for Robert Downey Jr. Been a fan of his since I was a kid. Hearts and Souls is a film I rewatched last week, which I used to love as a kid, and I watched it.
It
holds up. It's so, you know why? Because it's sincere. I think I've been watching a lot of movies from the 80s and 90s recently. I don't know why, but everything they made back then was sincere and done without tongue in cheek. Whereas I feel like nowadays everything is done with a little bit of a tongue in cheek kind of, you know,
you can't
meta, meta vibe. Yeah.
You can't do sincerity today. It just like you can't, sorry, you can, people don't. And it's, it sucks. It really does.
Yeah. And watching some of these older films, I'm just like, it's nice just to see movies where they're playing it sincere, and Heart and Soul is definitely wears its heart on its sleeve. So, but anyway, love Robert Downey Jr. So glad he won.
Yeah, I'm really glad he won. I've always been, I'm the one, but even as the Australian here, who was, I feel like he was robbed in 08. Like I still even with everything that happened with Heath, I still think Downey deserved it that year. And I think if he, I maintain that if Heath lived, Downey gets it that year. Like he wins, he does win the Oscar that year because
for Tropic Thunder, huh?
Because it was the comeback. Like I think that story was just too good. But then obviously with everything that happened with Heath, and I do think there is a poetic irony that 12 years, oh, sorry, that 16 years later, Nolan is the one that gets him his Oscar. Like there's just the poetic irony of it. Yeah, Downey's incredible in this movie. Downey's incredible. I'll talk about Oppenheimer later. But it was my favorite movie of the year. That movie is filled with so many fantastic supporting performances. Personally, Matt Damon's my favorite. I think Matt Damon comes into that movie and as the most unsung hero of the entire film. But Downey is essentially the co-lead. It's his second story. So like the second story, he's Vision and to Killian's Fusion. So I think that is really important. And I think that's why Downey won. I think Downey is fantastic in this movie. I would have loved to have seen Ryan Gosling as well get a win, because I think his role in as Ken in Barbie is incredible. And he proved it again. And he showed what a movie star he is when he did I'm Just Ken. Like you're a movie star. But yeah, like the Oscars didn't get this one wrong at all, I don't think. So yeah.
It was the best supporting performance of the year. It was up against three comedic performances, which the Academy hates, and a Robert De Niro performance that was dog shit and shouldn't have been nominated. So it was an easy win, but a very deserving win.
All right.
Nice. I got to bring this one up. We probably won't cover too many technical Oscars, but I do want to cover the special effects win for Godzilla Minus One.
Hell yeah.
And I have to bring this up because this leads to a very interesting conversation about Hollywood budgets, right? Let's just give a little bit of inflation and say the Godzilla Minus One's budget was $20 million, right? As opposed to Killers of the Flower Moon, which had a $200 million budget. That $20 million is on screen in Godzilla Minus One. So much so that it won an Academy Award for it. And I don't know about you guys, but I absolutely adored Godzilla Minus One. And yeah, visually, it was a amazing looking movie. And obviously, again, the Hollywood thought the same thing. So does this change, or does nothing change the machine that is Hollywood? Does this change the way that studios are going to be able to apply budgets now towards special effects? Or are the smart studios going to run to the team that did Godzilla Minus One and they're like, start hiring them by the droves?
Careful what you wish for with this one. There's a reason it was so cheap. It's the Japanese market with visual effects is they're not exactly the highest of paid visual effects artists compared to everywhere else in the world. That's one big aspect of it. Like obviously, like don't get me wrong, that doesn't explain Mission Impossible, $200 million, Godzilla, $20 million. Like, there is obviously a very, very inherent skill and talent to be able to get that level of, like, to make that movie look like that with that level of budget. But, like, Godzilla Minus One having a $20 million budget, it winning visual effects, it's a great thing for it. And hey, a Godzilla movie is now an Academy Award winning movie. Like, we have, like, Godzilla has won an Academy, and it's not even the American one, it's the actual Japanese version that actually won an Academy Award. That's even better. But it's the visual effects industry over there is not incredible in terms of
packages. Also, you know, a movie that, you know, Moose was a big fan of this year and looks like it cost $200 million, but cost about $80 million was The Creator.
Yeah.
That's... which was this competition. And what do those two directors have in common? They both come from special effects backgrounds. They both are guys who start off in special effects and then became directors. And I think that's why both those movies look three times their actual budget, because they are actually putting that skill. To me, that's a big deal as far as, like, why it looks as good as it does. But also, you know, money's different in Japan than it is in America. Everything, yeah. Corporations, everything's different there. So that's a whole other level to it. But Benny, you said you want to say something. I'm curious to hear what you had to say about this.
No, I was just going to say, like, it was my favorite movie of last year. So I was really happy that it got an award of any kind and got talked about. But yeah, it's like the reason that the effects budget on Godzilla was so low is because of what the effects team was paid. So, like, you could get making that movie here, you know, with the same amount of skill, it's $100 million movie.
Yeah.
You know, the difference is
in America,
things like that.
But America, aren't they paying like 100 guys? Whereas in Japan, they were paying what, like 13?
Well, yeah, that's because those dudes are working like 20 hours a day for the same price.
Yeah,
that's,
which, yeah. You know, into the Spider-Verse, you hear about, you know, the way those animators are treated here. So it's not that different in America, I feel like.
Yeah, it's...
I think you're going to get people definitely taking a look at a different philosophy, at least, you know, out of this. I mean, yeah, agreed. I mean, wages are definitely going to play a huge part into this budget. But I do think, you know, it's kind of a money ball effect. Certain people are going to look at it and go, okay, there might be a way to be able to make these movies a little cheaper.
This is part of a larger conversation that's a lot more serious than the Academy Awards. So, like, sure. It's kind of this. This is a huge conversation that needs to be held. But I do just want to... One part of it, unfortunately, is right now video game crunch culture is coming to movies. And that is concerning. That is massively concerning. But that's another conversation that we have to have at some point down the line. And it's not part of the, hey, we gave gold statues to people yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, Disney was getting a lot of scrutiny last year from basically the effects people being worked, like, you know, night and day, not being paid right. So it's an industry problem. But again, Godzilla, one of my favorite movies of last year. So excited to see not just to get an Oscar, but to see all of them show up. They all have the little Godzilla figures, and to see the, you know, a small team of people made this and they're rewarded for their amazing work. So I loved it.
Let's jump on to the next win, and that is Best Animated Film, The Boy and the Heron. Miyazaki wins the Academy Award for this movie over, I think, what was probably everybody's top choice, which was Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
First big upset of the night.
Yes, very big upset of the night.
I did not think this was an upset.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of a two-horse race.
It was a two-horse race, but it was a two-horse race in the way that, like, if Paul Giamatti won over Killian, it would have been like, that's an upset. But it was still a two-horse race. Like, Into the Spider-Verse was definitely the favorite going into this.
I didn't think it had a chance in hell.
Fair. That's crazy.
No, not a chance.
Benny, over here taking a strong stance. Why do you think it didn't have a chance in hell?
One, because the Academy Award loves foreign movies the last handful of years, and they hate superhero movies. So they had an international legend going up in his last film on a very like esoteric movie versus a superhero popcorn movie. It was not winning that award.
Okay, Benny, I'm not going to attack you specifically because you are not the only one who has said this. I have seen several people say this online.
Guys, I'm not attacking you, just everything you're saying.
Yeah, no, it's because several people have said the exact same thing as you. Guys, this Academy gave the first movie the Oscar. Like, it's not like they didn't give Into the Spider-Verse the Academy Award for Best Animated Film. They did. It won, and it beat several big movies that year. Like, it was a shock that it won that year. So, like, this isn't some, like, they don't like superhero movies. They don't like that. This is the same Academy that has given their biggest, one of their biggest awards to actors playing the Joker twice. Like, it does happen. They don't like superhero movies. It's not that they don't like them. It's just that not very many superhero movies are the best thing of the year.
It's the same thing as comedies, though. It's not a negative thing. Just a group of people, they tend to gravitate towards dramatic performances. And out of the two, The Boy and the Heron is an inherently more dramatic movie than Into the Spider-Verse.
Mm. No, I don't disagree with you there. But, like, yeah, it's just, just seeing the amount of people being like, oh, they wouldn't, the Academy were never going to give Across the Spider-Verse the Oscar. It's like, guys, they literally gave it to Into the Spider-Verse, and Into the Spider-Verse beat like Incredibles movie, Isle of Dogs. Like, it did beat movies.
And that was a huge mistake, and I respect them for course correcting this.
I will say this. I do think that this was also a like lifetime achievement award for Miyazaki. Like, the guy has put out a lot of movies. I have not seen this movie yet. And because it won the Oscar, obviously this is now top of my list to see, because I made it a point over the last couple of weeks to try to get caught up. Animated films just, and we've talked about this before, always don't just necessarily like are my go-to watches. I watch them when I feel like I need to watch them. But now I need to watch this movie. I have seen several of the Miyazaki movies in the past. They always have kind of the same theme. They always have kind of the same vibe to them. But I'm also glad that he's winning. The dude has been a legend for a very, very long time. And if this is indeed his song, Swan Song, then hey, why else wouldn't you give this guy the Oscar? A Lifetime Achievement Award would be amazing as well.
He's had three Swan Songs, and it's also not his first Oscar. Well, like, he has won previously. Like, he won the second one of all time in Spirited Away. So he has won before. But yeah, no, this is his third Swan Song. Like, third time I'm in my last ever movie, and then he comes back and does another one. With all due respect, I don't know if this will be his last one, because he'll come up with an idea, and if he does, great. I will love to keep seeing Miyazaki movies. I'm never going to complain about him coming out and saying, hey, I'm making another movie. Sweet.
Cocaine is expensive, folks. I agree. I definitely think that this was a big upset of the night. I think this was the first of a couple of big upsets of the night. But best international film, let's talk about that. Zone of Interest. I feel like this was a two-horse race. Here between two movies for best international film, feature film. I think the second one was going to be.
I don't think Anatomy was in there.
Anatomy wasn't nominated because France didn't put it up.
Yeah, I think Zone of Interest.
Sorry, I don't have my list.
Yeah, Zone of Interest was basically the favorite. I don't think anything else really had a chance to win.
I would have
an ad showing Al Pacino just popped up on my computer where my list was.
I would have been fascinated to see what this race would have looked like if Anatomy was nominated.
Yeah, then it would have been a race if those two were in there together.
Yeah.
What's interesting is I think the right movie won this award. Like, I really like Zone of Interest, and I like it more the more time I have to think about it. But like the fact that Anatomy of a Fall, which was a Best Picture nominee, also wasn't in this category, and Godzilla Minus One, which would have been sort of like the people's choice in this category, wasn't in it. Like, I don't think it would have had a chance to win, but I would have been really interested to see how the voting broke down if those other two movies that also, you know, got love were in that category.
This is, again, just the inherent problem with this category. So the way it works is each country's only allowed to put one film up. So that's why Godzilla Minus One wasn't nominated, because Japan put Perfect Days up instead, and Perfect Days was nominated. And then France put up a movie called The Taste of Things. Now, Taste of Things is a very good movie, but it's not Anatomy of a Fall. And so that's why it happened, is because the country will put up one movie and that's their representation and that's what gets nominated. And it's a really silly system and they need to fix it. And it's dumb every year when we go, oh, this one missed out because they picked the quote unquote lesser movie. Like, it's just dumb. And I'll still never forgive them, because Portrait of a Lady on Fire deserved the Oscar that year. And it, or at least deserved the competition, because that was the Parasite year, but it deserved a fight. And it didn't even get nominated because of freaking Les Mis.
Moving on to our next win. And then I think we'll take a break after we discuss this next one.
Just one last thing about Zone of Interest winning. That was the speech of the
night. No, you're done. Of course you can.
that was the speech of the night. Glazer's speech, I thought, was really well done. And given the topic, given what his film is about, and I thought he had to say something about what's going on in Gaza right now, and he did, and he didn't back down. So well done. Really well done, Glazer.
Yep, agreed. 100%. So let's talk about Best Original Song. I thought that this was very, very interesting. So the winner of Best Original Song was What Was I Made For by Billie Eilish and Finneas O'Connell, beating out I'm Just Ken, which I think might have been probably the greatest moment of the evening, watching Gosling just – and Gosling's a movie star. Like, nobody else besides Ryan Gosling can pull that off in a head-to-toe pink – like rhinestoned suit, like just pulling off like an incredible performance. I was a little like, this was my choice for what I thought was going to win. But I also like really thought like, well, there's a good chance that I'm Just Ken is going to win. So thoughts on Billie Eilish winning her, also becoming the youngest two-time Oscar winning song artist. So we've got a two-time Oscar winner winning in this role. Your guys' thoughts on Billie Eilish winning this over
I'm Just Ken,
The Fire Inside from Flaming Hot, The Killers of the Flower Moon, A Song for My People, and of course It Never Went Away from American Symphony.
You get is Ken or this song? The other ones didn't have a shot. Okay, no. So let's just throw them in the trash. They did a good job. The songs were fine. Ken had the best performance. Billie Eilish song, she wasn't even facing the crowd half the time. I don't know what the hell was going on with that performance. I thought
like a weird, like rotating stage.
I understand why it won, because I think it has the moment in the movie that's the most like emotional and heartfelt. Sure. But at the end of the day, I just think I'm Just Ken's a better song. It's more catchy, and it encapsulates what most of the movie's vibe is. I mean, that moment with the other song is kind of like, oh, that's a poignant moment. But the rest of the movie is like that Ken song. It is very out there, fun, imaginative, you know, saying a lot of different things with the satire. So I don't think it should have been close. I think I'm Just Ken should have won. But Billie Eilish, you know, she's a big star. She's young. I think they want to give it to her.
I think
it's part of it.
No, historically, when there's two songs from a movie and one's the fun, catchy one and the other one is the more emotional one, they give it to the emotional one. That's like historically that the only time they haven't was Under the Sea. Under the Sea beat Kiss the Girl.
But I would argue this is the Under the Sea of the Bond universe.
And I would agree. Oh, sure. I would 100% agree with you. I believe I'm Just Ken deserved it. And I absolutely think, especially with the performance of the night, like I think it deserved it. And I think if they could have gone back and redone it, they would have. But like it, you know, historically, that's just not what happens. Beauty and the Beast beat Be Our Guest. A Whole New World beat Friend Like Me. Like it, the historically, when there is two and one's the emotional and one's the fun, the emotional one wins. And I, that's why I just, from day dot, it's been, What Was I Made For is going to win because it's the emotional one. And if we get a surprise, I will love it, but I bet the house on What Was I Made For because that's the Oscar voters.
I feel like everybody in that audience, you know, when they fill out these ballots, they're just looking at a little box with a name next to it. And they just saw Billie Eilish. They filled that box in. Oh, that's a good song. But you tell me when they were sitting in that theater, and Ryan Gosling performed that song, I guarantee you half the people in that academy were like, damn it, I probably should have voted for I'm Just Ken. This is a way better song.
Did you guys know that Ray Parker Jr. was nominated for an Oscar for Ghostbusters?
As he should be.
Yes, and that concludes my interest in this award at this ceremony that should be at the Grammys. No one cares.
I will say visually, a song for my people from Killers of a Flower Moon was beautiful on stage. I thought that whole performance was just riveting. Like I was traveling back from Catalina yesterday, so I actually didn't get to watch any of the Oscars. I watched the Oscars today, a day later. So yeah, I avoided social media. I avoided any alerts on my phone. Obviously I knew Oppenheimer won because there's no silencing that alert on your phone. I did get a chance to do this, and I was sitting at a charger today charging my car as that came on, and I just repeat that like two or three times because I just thought so like visually, and it was like such a like celebration of the Osage people. So I very much enjoyed that one. Obviously I very much enjoyed I Love Ken. I thought for sure after like that performance that was what was gonna win, but then logic, like Jacob said, logic kind of kicked in. And I said this when the Barbie movie came out and we were doing a review. I was like, I think Billie Eilish will probably win the Oscar for best song. So not to say I told you so, but I fucking told you so. they were fun performances, like especially the I Love Ken. I thought it was great that they had all the Kens from the movie that were out there dancing on stage. Watching Simu Liu, the dude is just having like the most fun out there. Like, shit, let him host the Oscars. I think that would be a load of fun. Well, we are going to take a quick break, folks. When we come back, we're going to start hitting some of the heavy, big top spots for the Oscars, right? We're talking best actress, best director, best score. We talked about best song. We haven't even hit the best scores yet. So stay tuned. We're going to get to that next.
Are we really supposed to let these boys just skate by?
The Holdovers reminds us that nothing changes your life like changing someone else's.
They've had it easy their whole lives.
You don't know that, did you?
It's been celebrated by the Critics' Choice Awards, the Golden Globes, the Screen Actors Guild, and the PGA. And now, The Holdovers has been nominated for 5 Academy Awards, including Best Actor Paul Giamatti, Best Supporting Actress Divine Joy Randolph, Best Screenplay, and the Best Picture of the Year. The Holdovers, rated R. In theaters now are yours to own.
We're at war.
Detonator charged.
There's a chance that when we push that button, we destroy the world.
We're in a race against the Nazis.
I have no choice.
Is it big enough
to end the war?
To end the war.
7, 6, 5, 4, 3.
That's happening, isn't it?
2, 1.
Oppenheimer in theaters July 21st. Rated R.
Lights, camera, action. We're back for a little bit more Oscar talk here. And kicking off our next segment is going to be Best Original Score. Ludwig Göransson, the winner for this one, for his outstanding score for Oppenheimer. Now, I know what you're saying. Wait a minute. Hans Zimmer is exclusively doing Nolan movies. That's horseshit. Ludwig Göransson got himself his second Oscar for the movie Oppenheimer. What's your guys' thoughts on that?
Love it. I mean, he first came on my radar with the first Creed. Actually, when I was working at Screen Junkies, he came in and we interviewed him, and he was a super nice guy. Yeah, Creed was one of those movies where the score actually stood out to me a lot because he would drop hints of the Rocky score throughout the movie, but just like one note here and there. And then if you've seen the first Creed, the first time you hear the actual Rocky, like, you know, score is at this moment where Creed gets up and it's like, it was just perfect timing. The score was a great reinvention of the Rocky kind of soundtrack in some ways for a modern audience. So this guy showed a lot of promise early on. And yeah, watching Oppenheimer the night before the Oscars, that score is like the pulse of the movie in a lot of ways. So I thought it was fantastic and a much deserved win.
Yeah. This is a year that kind of really feels like 2010, where it's like, God damn it, only one of these movies can win. Because there's like, I love the Oppenheimer score. Like, it's my favorite score of the year. Like, I've played that score over all the time. But God damn it, every time I heard Poor Things, like, I love the Poor Things score so much. And it's just a heartbreak because only one of these movies can win. But no, I'm really glad Oppenheimer won. I think this is Ludwig's second Oscar. He previously won for Black Panther.
Right.
And, you know, I know you made the joke about Hans Zimmer, but he's been working with Nolan recently as well. Like, he did Tenet because Hans was busy doing Dune. So, right. We're kind of now starting to get a little bit of a collaboration. And what I love about it is it's so different. Like, it's that his musical approach has been very different to Hans. Hans is with Nolan films, so his scores are very different to what we're used to. So I'm really over the moon that Oppenheimer won this. I'm still devastated that Across the Spider-Verse missed out on a nomination. Like, even in that, hearing that little bit from the Indiana Jones, get that Indiana Jones score out. Like, put Across the Spider-Verse in, please. I'm begging you. But yeah, other than that, I'm just really happy Oppenheimer won.
This was kind of a no-brainer for me. I figured Logan Wood was going to win. I mean, Oppenheimer, again, scores make the movies, and you already had a masterclass of a movie that's unfolding out in front of you with the movie Oppenheimer, and that music just kept it tense the entire time. Like, that's a 3-hour movie, and you can sit there and you can watch that movie, and it does not feel like 3 hours. And why is that? Is because that score is pushing you through, and it's keeping that movie going. I agree 100%. Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, there is very little of that score that I have not heard in 4 other Indiana Jones movies. Listen, it's John Williams, so I think just from now until the day he dies, he's going to get an honorary Oscar every year. But yeah, that didn't deserve to win. I did think Poor Things was my kind of wild card in there. Having just recently seen Poor Things in like the last 2 weeks. Yes, that score was quirky enough for that movie that it fit perfectly. But yeah, I think we're witnessing kind of the rise of a star with Ludwig Göransson. He's a younger guy. I mean, Black Panther obviously was what really put him on the map. But JT, you kind of mentioned it too. I mean, Creed, he brings back, like, it's very easy to just be able to duplicate the Rocky theme to that movie, but it doesn't come in until so late in the movie. And then what he did with Black Panther was incredible. So I think we're witnessing, like, it's going to be kind of a once John Williams, sadly, unfortunately, one day passes away, like, I think we're going to get like Ludwig and Hans, like, duking it out every year for different scores, provided we continue to get it. I think Hans will probably win it this year for Dune 2. That's my early prediction in March. I'm just saying that Dune 2 soundtrack was awesome. But yeah, Ludwig, absolutely well-deserved. I can't wait to hear more from this guy. Like, everything he's turned out and every movie he's touched has just been incredible.
He looks like an Anne Rice vampire.
Moving on.
Not wrong. Not wrong. Maybe you should do Blade.
I mean, we did get a little Mahershala Ali sighting. All right, moving on to best actor. Let's just knock this one out here. We had Cillian Murphy winning for Oppenheimer.
Now, if your movie is called Oppenheimer and it's going to win Best Picture, you kind of got to give the guy the best actor who plays Oppenheimer. That's like Tom Hanks not winning for Forrest Gump. If the name is the character and it's nominated and it's going to win, you kind of got to give it to him.
But you got to admit that this year's nominee cast for Best Actor was stacked. Bradley Cooper as Leonard Bernstein from Maestro.
Thumbs down.
Coleman Domingo in Rustin.
Didn't see.
Paul Giamatti. Like, I had my heart hoping that it was going to be Giamatti.
That was his only competition.
Because I love the holdover. I think that was his only. I don't know. Jeffrey Wright was so good in American Fiction, too.
Disagree. He was fine.
I think he's.
Let me fucking finish, you dick.
I'll meet you halfway. I think he's incredible in American Fiction. He had no chance winning this Oscar. Like, it was this was a two horse race with Bradley Cooper as a potential third upset. Bradley Cooper,
the Academy does love themselves from Bradley.
Bradley Cooper became the villain of this Academy Awards because the biggest reason why was because people were so in love with this performance from Cillian that we all kind of saw the writing on the wall with, God damn it, they're going to Gary Oldman, Rami Malek, like this whole thing, and Bradley Cooper's going to win he did a biopic movie, and because he put makeup on, he's going to win Best Actor. And that was the fear, and that's how Bradley Cooper became this year's villain. And I think because it was so early, that's like Bradley Cooper just never had a chance to take off. Giamatti, I think if the Oscars are back in February, like if they're a week after the Super Bowl, which is when I think they should be, this is a lot closer of a race. But I think because of the last month, it's just constantly been Oppenheimer, Oppenheimer, Oppenheimer. It's just taken over. And that's how Cillian has won. A very well-deserved win, by the way. That's not a criticism at all. Cillian nails this movie, and absolutely, it's just great to be able to say Cillian Murphy, Academy Award winner. Like, that's just, yep, deserved.
Yeah, and the dude's put in 20 years of character work and been, you know, the second, third, fourth billed actor in how many movies that we've seen this guy in. So he's finally given the opportunity. He's got obviously who he would probably consider his muse. I mean, I think Christopher Nolan knows how to be able to get these performances. I think Christopher Nolan's known how good of an actor he is. He's just not been able to sell Cillian Murphy as the leading man. And he finally had this project. Christopher Nolan's hot. People go to see Christopher Nolan's movies. Yeah, Cillian Murphy, well-deserved. I agree. Like I said, my heart wanted Giamatti just simply because I've loved Giamatti for a very long time. I thought he was outstanding in the holdovers, but I knew, like, your heart says this, your brain says this. My brain said it was going to be Cillian Murphy. My heart wanted Giamatti. I'm not upset in any way. I enjoyed that performance.
I think the correct performance won. I like Paul Giamatti, but Paul Giamatti has played a curmudgeon many times in the course of cinema, and he did a great job with it. But like, this is Cillian Murphy's like first, you know, big lead role, whereas Paul Giamatti has been a very similar character multiple times in fairly notable movies. So I think it was pretty much a wrap.
Now let's talk about what maybe is the biggest upset of the night, and that's Best Actress.
Well, it's the only one that had any real competition going into the night. Like, where it was like, this is a two-horse race. No one knew what was going to win.
Mm-hmm. So it was Emma Stone wins for Poor Things. She was nominated against Annette Bening for Naiad. Lily Gladstone, which I think was her biggest competition, for Killers of the Flower Moon. Sandra Hüller from Anatomy of a Fall. And Carey Mulligan for Maestro. Well, Carey Mulligan and Annette Bening put out solid performances. I agree. I think that this was a two-horse race. I think, myself included, I gave the Oscar to Lily Gladstone in my mind before the evening even began for Killers of the Flower Moon. I love her performance, but wasn't jazzed about the movie, but I do think that she was the best part of it. And I think that if you're the best part of a Martin Scorsese movie opposite Leonardo DiCaprio and Robert De Niro, then you have done your job. I like the story too of her being the first Native American Oscar winner. So I was really rooting for her to win, but I also just saw Poor Things within the last 2 weeks. And as soon as I finished that movie, I said, holy shit, Emma Stone should win. Like, her performance in that movie is incredible. So again, the heart tells you one thing, but the mind tells you the other. And if I hadn't seen Poor Things within the last 2 weeks, I would be sitting here bitching about how Lily Gladstone was robbed. But I have, and she was outstanding in that movie. So yeah, I think the right actress won.
So as my feelings on Poor Things are well known, it's one of my least favorite movies of the past decade. Like, I am not a fan. But that being said, Emma Stone should have won Best Actress. Like, that performance out of all of these, I think, would have been the hardest to do. I think it required the most guts to do it. And even though I do not personally like the movie, I think her performance was really good in it, and I think she should have won. Lily Gladstone, I thought, was great in that movie, but it's a bad movie. I don't care what anyone says. That's a boring and awful, self-indulgent piece of shit. But she should have been nominated, but she shouldn't have won.
JT, Jacob, rebuttals. What do you guys got here?
I said this before. You know, I had people over to watch Oscars. We printed out the Vanity Fair, you know, make your picks. And when it came down to it, if I was just a like Academy member and I was voting, who do I think should win? I would have put Emma Stone. But who did I think was going to win? Because of everything like Jacob said, first Native American, just the politics around the nomination, I was thinking Lily was going to win it. But I do think the right person won. It reminded me a little bit of what Chadwick lost to Anthony Hopkins. Mm. The people were just in love with that performance by Anthony Hopkins. And even though the better story would have been Chadwick, they gave it to who they thought gave the best performance. And I think that's what happened here.
Well, I also think that that's where you saw, like, so I was saying this last night with Taylor watching it. Over the last 5 years, there has been, you know, the historic moment or something, like, as in, you know, so last year it was Cate Blanchett versus Michelle Yeoh. Like, who was going to win? And, you know, there's always been that person who has been, you are going to be the villain. If you win, you become the villain in the story. And then, you know, but Michelle Yeoh won. So she was so Cate Blanchett didn't have to be the villain. The year before, Will Smith won, and everyone was, and like going into that, there was Andrew Garfield or like someone's going to be the villain, and we're not going to have another black actor win, especially after what had just happened with Chadwick. But then Will Smith won and everything happened there. And then the Chadwick one happened, but Anthony Hopkins wasn't there to accept. So we never really got to see like, oh, you've got to, someone's got to go up and accept the award when this happens. And then obviously same with like Parasite, where it was between, if 1917 had won, there would have been like the someone's got to go up and accept this and been the person who stopped history from happening. It's the first time we've actually really seen someone have to go up there and accept, I stopped history. And I think Emma handled it extremely well. I think you could tell she was shocked. She was genuinely shocked. She did not think she was going to win that award. She thought it was Lily's. I think there's a part of her who was like, I don't want this at this moment. But I also think if right now she, like, there's that moment of, I'm really thankful that I won, because obviously she's being recognized among her peers. But I also think that's why she spent the first half of her speech thanking Lily and sharing it with Lily and going, this should have been yours. Personally, I'm happy Emma won. I agree with JTE. I thought it was going to be Lily, but Emma gave my favorite performance of the year. I loved Emma's performance in this movie so much. She makes the movie. It is why the movie works as well as it does. It is, and you're right, it is an extremely brave performance. So I was really glad that Emma did win it. I didn't think it would happen, but I was over the moon happy that she did.
The Academy loves it some Sexual Awakening. That gives you like a 20% vote total increase.
Up next, we have Best Director. Christopher Nolan, obviously winning it for Oppenheimer, up against Justine Triet for Anatomy of a Fall, Martin Scorsese for Killers of the Flower Moon, Yorgos Lanthimos for Poor Things. JT, who directed Poor Things? No. Okay, not even going to try this time around. Fair enough. And then Jonathan Glazer for Zone of Interest. Jacob, kick us off. I think we lost JTE there. I think he's trying to pronounce Yorgos Lanthimos.
I'm back. Sorry about that. Legolas.
Look, I got a lot of crap from my friends for saying this. I really loved that it was Spielberg giving Nolan the Oscar because for the last 30 years, everyone's been asking the question, who's the next Spielberg? And for the last 10 years, I've been saying it's Nolan. Is the next Spielberg.
I thought it was M. Night Shyamalan.
but that's my point. Everyone keeps asking, who is it? And it wasn't M. Night. I really think it's
first
Nolan.
First off, M. Night's the only one answering that question with M. Night.
J.J. Abrams, I think, was dancing there for a little bit.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. Like, there were people dancing. There were people who were thinking, it's him. It's Nolan. Nolan is the one who has been able to so succinctly match dramatic, sincere films with commercial success. And to the point where my parents know who Christopher Nolan is. He's one of the few directors who is able to like cross over to where general audiences know his name. And that's the sign of Spielberg. And I got pushback from that because, he's not... He doesn't have the heart of he's Kubrick. He's Kubrick with success. I will admit that stylistically wise, but that's always been Nolan. That's always been Spielberg. Spielberg's always been, I had the success Kubrick didn't. So.
You know what? I will agree with you 100%. I'll back you on that. And it's Arnold Schwarzenegger walking by the rock in, the Rundown. It's kind of that passing of the baton from, one legend. I mean, look, this is his first win, but the dude has been nominated 8 times. Like, I can make an argument that The Dark Knight should have won him an Academy Award. It has gone down as one of the greatest crime movies of all time. You can call it a superhero movie, yes, because it features the Batman and the Joker, but that is a crime thriller. And so Christopher Nolan has repeatedly been turning out these solid movies. Interstellar should have won him an Academy Award. Like, there's so many of these movies, and understandably, like, you've got to take it on the knuckles and you eventually have to earn your win. The dude put out an outstanding movie, one of the highest grossing movies of the year. And then on top of it, like, look at the technical awards that this movie won. Look at the acting awards that this movie has won. If Nolan didn't win this, it would seriously be the biggest upset, I think, in Oscars history. Yeah. But I agree 100% with you, Jacob. Like, I liked Spielberg giving it to Nolan. I thought that was a very nice nod. I do think, like, look, Spielberg's last few movies not been great. Like, we're still going to get some more from Spielberg because he's Spielberg. But Nolan's going to take the reins as one of the better filmmakers, maybe one of the best. I mean, he's got some good competition right now going with, like, Denis Villeneuve is another hot one right now. Obviously, he's coming off of Dune 2. But I think Nolan's going to be the name in movies. He's going to be the new Spielberg for the next decade for sure. So yes, to agree with you, I loved that Spielberg gave Nolan the Academy Award.
Should we just go right to Best Picture since we're talking Nolan anyway?
So since we're talking Nolan, Best Picture winner was indeed Oppenheimer. It went up against the likes of American Fiction, Anatomy of a Fall, Barbie, The Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Past Lives, Poor Things, and The Zone of Interest. After seeing Oppenheimer this past summer and experiencing the whole Barbenheimer phenomenon, how early on after seeing that movie did you go, this is going to win Best Picture?
I didn't believe that it would win until about November. November, I started to go, oh, nothing's come. Like, so I saw Oppenheimer with Taylor and my father and mother-in-law, and straight up, and right after we came out, my father-in-law goes, oh, that'll win Best Picture. And I just went, no, it won't. No, it won't. Like, I just went, it's too early. It won't win Best Picture. And that was my straight thing. I was like, I didn't think it would, because I didn't think anything. I thought something else was going to come out later in the year that would supplant it. But it never had the competition. Like, Killers didn't come out and really give it a run for its money that we thought it would. Poor Things came close. I think Poor Things was a lot closer than many people thought it would, but it came, like, I think most people would admit Poor Things probably came second in given the results of the night. I think Poor Things probably came second. Holdovers didn't quite latch on the way that I thought I thought it would in November. I didn't think Oppenheimer was going to win until November, and we started seeing these movies that were going to be competition not be competition. And I was like, oh, okay, this thing's going to win. And it don't get me wrong, massively deserved win. Oppenheimer is my favorite movie of the year. Like, it was my absolute favorite movie. I can't believe how breezy of a 3-hour watch it is. That's my biggest takeaway having watched it now, which is funny because the first time I watched it, I thought it was long. And now I'm just like, I can watch this so easily. Like, it's not even long at all. It just flies by. And yeah, I'm so happy it did. I'm happy. The producer I'm actually most happy with is Charles Roven, because he's been Nolan's biggest supporter for his entire career. And he finally won his Academy Award. Like, I'm really happy for him to finally have his Academy Award as Nolan's biggest supporter for decades. So, yeah.
I'll say this. Once this movie started making, you know, over $500 million and close to $1 billion, that's when I was like, this thing's probably got it in the bag for Best Picture, because this is not Top Gun Maverick. This is not Avatar Way of Water. This is not a big entertainment blockbuster. It is a 3-hour, well, even though it has the budget of those movies, it never feels like one of those movies. It feels like an art house film. It feels like a movie with the DNA of like JFK and some of these other great epics, where a lot of things are going on, a lot of things are intercut. Just the editing in this movie is so untraditional compared to like your average blockbuster, that when I was watching the movie, I was like, yeah, this doesn't feel like... I understand Barbie making $1 billion. It is fun. Everyone can go have a good time. There's music numbers. There's great, you know, it's just a fun movie. It's something I could see people seeing over and over again. This is that, but in the complete opposite direction. It is a thought-provoking drama about the creation of, like, you know, one of the greatest inventions in human history. And it plays, it doesn't hold your hand. This movie is not a movie that I think just anybody could jump into and have a great time with. You kind of have to be on board with what he's trying to tell and the way he's trying to tell it. So once this movie made close to $900 million, I was like, there's no way anything else is going to beat this unless something came out and just knocked my socks off. So yeah, it deserved it and won it. And I'm not surprised in the least amount, to be honest with you.
So I'm one of the people, like, I thought it would win Best Picture, like when I walked out from seeing it. So I said that to myself the same day that I saw it. Like, after thinking about it, like, and like, I think Nolan should have won, and I think Oppenheimer should have won. Like I said, it was my second favorite movie of last year, a great movie. If I had my preference, I would have had Best Director and Best Picture split between Zone of Interest and Oppenheimer, one way or the other. I don't really care which way the split goes. I just would have liked them to split. And where I think Oppenheimer is a far more enjoyable movie, and I will definitely watch Oppenheimer again. I watched half of it earlier today. But Zone of Interest is, I think, by far the most challenging out of any of those 10 films. And I think it just because of how small of a setting it is and because it never actually shows you anything, but the feelings that you get when you watch it, I think it's like a really good job of directing. So I would have been, if I had my druthers, because I would have preferred those been split, because I would have liked to have seen it got one or the other. I think it's that impressive of a job.
Real quick before you go, talk your stuff about Oppenheimer, then I'll ask a question later.
Oh, no, I was actually going to just say, look, let's go into some final thoughts about the Oscars. But since you asked about my opinion on Oppenheimer, the right movie won, the right director won, the right actors won. I can't speak highly enough. I mean, I've said my piece about Oppenheimer. I absolutely adored that movie. That was my second favorite movie of last year, just slightly behind Holdovers. But I agree with everything you guys are saying. Like, I can easily sit down and watch that movie and not regret losing those 3 hours. It's such a well done movie, and I'm pumped for Nolan to get his first Oscar. I'm pumped for Robert Downey Jr. I'm pumped for Cillian Murphy. Like, I'm pumped for Ludwig Göransson. Like, again, like, there's certain movies that come out and you go, that's those are going to be the Oscar favorites. Like, that is going to win a lot. I walked away from it not necessarily knowing that Christopher Nolan, like, saying, like, Nolan's going to win the Oscar. I figured he would get nominated, but I did walk away saying that's going to win Best Score. I walked away saying Robert Downey Jr. is a shoo-in for an Academy Award for this role. And I think Cillian Murphy will get nominated. I walked away saying Emily Blunt's going to get nominated. Hell, I even thought possibly Florence Pugh might get nominated. So, again, the right movie won Best Picture of the Year. The right director won. That whole collaboration team that Nolan has together, perfect. JT, sorry I cut you off, bud.
No, I interrupted you. Yeah, I'll just agree with everything you said. I also, like, to what Jacob said earlier, Matt Damon really comes in and kind of just kills it in that movie. Everyone plays their part perfectly. Nobody is, there's not really a false note from any of the acting in that movie. But looking at the Best Picture nominee list, if you could pick the winner besides Oppenheimer, what would have been your choice besides Oppenheimer to win? For me, it was The Holdovers. It was my number two movie of the year. I know, Moose, you're a big fan. Would that have been your pick, if not for Oppenheimer?
If I had not seen Poor Things in the last 2 weeks, yes. My vote now, if Oppenheimer had not won, it would have been Poor Things.
Really? Over Holdovers?
I love The Holdovers. Don't get me wrong. Like, I love The Holdovers movie more than I do Poor Things. I think Poor Things is just a very, very well-made movie. It's not a movie I'm going to continue to revisit. Like I will The Holdovers. I feel like The Holdovers I'm going to watch every Christmas from now on. But from a technical standpoint, from an acting standpoint, from a directing standpoint, from a world building standpoint, Yorgos Lanthimos put out like an incredible movie. So I would have said my second pick would have been Poor Things and then The Holdovers.
All right. What about you, Jacob?
I'd be leaning between either Past Lives or Anatomy of a Fall. They were my two and three. I'd probably be leaning more towards Anatomy of a Fall. I think Anatomy of a Fall is just such a well-made film. And I was so happy that it won screenplay. That it won something. Like, it's quite amazing, you know. So 10 films nominated, 7 of them all won Academy Awards. Like, 7 of the 10 did end up winning a Academy Award. Past Lives, Maestro, and Killers were the 3 that missed out.
I think it just plays to how strong of a year it was. I think all these nominees are good movies. Like, they're all really good films, not great. Benny, what do you say?
So I hadn't seen Zone of Interest when we did our top 10 episode last year. Finally having gotten to see it, like, I think about that movie a lot. So I would say more than any movie I saw last year, I've spent more time thinking about it than any other. So to me, that makes it probably the most provocative piece of art out of the 10. So I would say that if it wasn't Oppenheimer, it would be Zone of Interest.
Nice.
Well, let's wrap it up, folks, on the Oscar talk, because I do want to, like, JT, you pitched an idea earlier that I'm jazzed about. And it's, what was the most recent thing that we watched? And since we got Jacob here, I want to hear what you guys have watched recently. But let's do final decision or final thoughts here on the Oscars. Jacob, good show. Was who deserved to win? One. Take it away.
I don't think there was any real genuine, like, oh, they got that wrong. As it like this year, I don't think for at least in the major categories, like I'm pretty happy with pretty much all the winners. There was some that I wouldn't have personally picked, but like for the most part, I think they got pretty much everything right. So the actual awards, I think was one of the better ones. It's a really unfortunate though how much, and this speaks to more how late the Oscars are now. How predictable they've become. Like, obviously, there was about, you know, there were two or three categories that were toss ups, but majority of these, we've known the result for the last month, 2 months. And I really wish the Oscars would go back to the week after the Super Bowl. That's, I think, the perfect time is the weekend after the Super Bowl, mid February, just knock it out. Because that I think, yeah, like you get surprises, you get some shocks, you get people haven't had so long to sit and stew and think about, like you kind of get gut reactions, and I think that's what you kind of want with these. So yeah,
Benny, once the money starts flowing in for the Extra Movie Butter Boys, you are going to be our red carpet. Because I know how much you love award shows. So you're going to be our red carpet correspondent. Final thoughts on the Academy Awards.
As I've always said, I think there shouldn't be voting. They should bring in the 5 nominees for each category, bring them up on stage, have them fight in a Royal Rumble style fight. The last one still on the stage gets the Oscar. I think that's the only legitimate way to do it to avoid controversy. Like I said, it mostly went chalk. I was happy with a lot of the winners. I think Oppenheimer was a great movie, and I'm glad it won the awards that it did. Poor Things, I do not like the movie, but I respect a lot of the performances and the craft that went into the movie, so I didn't mind the awards that it went, even though I really don't like the movie. And it was a really strong year for the Oscars. Usually I go into the Oscars liking 2 or 3 of the movies nominated, and there's 6 or 7 movies like in this year's crop, I'm like, hey, I actually really like that movie, which is a rarity for me. So overall, I can't complain. Like I said, it's never really going to be my thing, but you know, I'm happy that the people are happy.
JTE, final thoughts, pal.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this Oscars. I was pretty happy with the overall presentation. I thought Kimmel did a serviceable job. He is not bad. He's not great, but he does good, and he makes me feel at home because he's done it a few times now. It did kind of remind me of the older Oscars of the 90s and early 2000s. I don't know. Just felt like it was back to the way it used to be, and I was fully entertained from beginning to end. So, in my opinion, one of the better Oscars we've had in the past 5-10 years or so. So, yeah, really enjoyed it. No super controversy. No slapping, no wrong envelopes. Obviously, it's hard to top those things, but I just thought it was a very smooth and very entertaining show overall.
That is one other joke I thought Kimmel did that was actually funny. It was where
he
just screamed, just someone like hang on to that envelope.
Yeah.
Be prepared. There's a real chance we could get our first back-to-back since Tom Hanks next year.
What does she have coming up?
Kinds of Kindness with Yorgos again next year. There's a chance. We could have our first back-to-back since Tom Hanks. So, which, man, if the Lily the people who loved Lily weren't already pissed.
Well, before we say our goodbyes, what the hell have you guys been watching? Jacob, you keep shaking your head every time I ask that question. Are you just going to throw Dune 2 at us again?
No, I'm going to throw Oppenheimer because it's literally what I watched last night. Taylor and I started a tradition. We're going to watch the Best Picture winner every night, like every time that it, like after the Oscars. So we started that tradition because you can do it here because you guys actually, you know, release the movies relatively quickly onto like, but from by the time that the Oscars are on, you have the ability to own them. You can't do that in Australia. Like they're generally still playing in theaters. So, so I watched Oppenheimer last night, but I'm not going to throw that because there was a movie that I watched that the last time I was on this podcast I had talked about, and that was of course the Batman. I watched that the other night because I don't even know why, but like I was just in. I've been in the mood to rewatch it recently, like after seeing Dune, and I don't know why. I just kind of was like, oh, I kind of want the mature, the like visually stunning
boredom
blockbusters that we're just getting lately, and I'm absolutely just loving them. And yeah, so I watched Batman, and I was so glad I did because I love that movie. It is such a masterpiece. I rewatched the Batman, but new movie wise, yeah, I've been really bad with going to the movies lately. The last movie I saw in theaters that was new that wasn't Dune was Driveway Dolls. So.
Fucking brutal. Folks, if you don't remember, Jacob was my outstanding, I'm not even going to call him partner. He was kind of the leader of our team against the villainous JTE and Benny Hamlin, who said that the Batman was not a good movie. However, good always triumphs over evil. And of course, Jacob and I won that argument, and we can now legally declare that the Batman is a masterpiece.
I will say, you too. I have watched it a lot since our argument because anytime I have trouble going to sleep, I just throw it on and slowly puts me right to bed. it's great. It's a great.
All right, you know, fucker. What have you been watching recently?
I've been watching older films that I didn't like or I grew to hate and just kind of revisiting them because I want to see if I still hate them.
Oh.
And I did that with a movie from the 90s, 1998 to be exact. I didn't like really when it came out. I didn't really like for a long time, but I hadn't watched it maybe in like 20 years. And watching it, I actually was like, this is as bad as I thought it was. I'm talking about Roland Emmerich's Godzilla.
Ooh.
Now, listen, are you comparing it to, if you compare it to any other Godzilla movie, it is nowhere near as good. But if you just divorce your brain from it being a Godzilla movie and just think of it as a Roland Emmerich big summer monster movie, I think there's some fun stuff in there. And like I said, when I mentioned earlier, Roland Emmerich is being sincere with his filmmaking where he is really trying to make a big summer 90s blockbuster. And at times it works. It's not a great movie. It might not even be a good movie. But I will say after revisiting it after all these years, it wasn't as bad as I remembered, and I actually had some fun with it, even though the CGI doesn't hold up really at all.
Fair. Benny, what have you been watching, bud?
So my work week just ended. So the last movie I watched was a few days ago because JTE texted me and said, have you seen Deep Rising? You need to get on that, which is I came to learn a few days ago as a 1998 sci-fi movie.
Same year as Godzilla.
Yeah. And it stars Treat Williams, which I didn't know going in. And I don't know if you've ever had the experience of firing up a movie and then finding out you're in for an hour and 45 minutes of Treat Williams. It always whets the appetite right off the bat. And I will say this, as a connoisseur of really bad movies, this is a very bad movie. It's bad in a fun way. I'll give it that. It knows it's a bad movie. Yeah. And like whoever Femke Janssen's representatives were like in the 90s, they are clearly the worst representatives in the history of Hollywood. She should have been a huge star after the X-Men, man. They drove her career under the ground. But that's neither here nor there. Nonetheless, if you want an hour and a half of Meg-like goodness, but with some solid 1990 CGI tentacle monster. Get on Deep Rising. It is worth the watch.
Steven Sommers, right before The Mummy. The Mummy is still his best film, but you can see the seeds of fun that he has with filmmaking in Deep Rising. A very tongue-in-cheek, fun monster film. And one of my favorite last shots of like a monster movie. It's very fun. Do you remember did everybody here see Deep Rising?
Nope. Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, you have.
I saw that in theaters with my Aunt Sandy way back in the day.
I saw it.
Look, you mentioned a bad 90s movie. Chances are I haven't seen it. In the 90s, nope.
I recommend checking it out. I think it's a very fun movie. If you had some popcorn, some sodas. I mean, Moose, are you out on this movie?
Look, dude, if you are going to give this a watch, Jacob, be sure those sodas that you have some Jack Daniels in there, maybe a little Captain Morgan. That'll help you definitely get through this movie.
I got too many other movies. I got I got 300 movies I'm currently trying to get through before the middle of March, like, which is a week from now. So I'm not going I'm focusing on a lot of other things at the moment.
Nah, scrap all of that. Just get this and Ghost Ship as a double feature. Get really drunk and settle in.
God help me.
Well, my movie's kind of predictable. I was in Catalina this weekend. My wife was running the marathon on Saturday. Okay, so can you guess what movie I watched most recently?
Oh, Step Brothers.
Of course. The 2008 Adam McKay classic that is Step Brothers. Still one of the greatest comedies of all time. And as a wedding, my wife and I will be celebrating our 10-year wedding anniversary this year. So I bought her tickets to the Catalina Wine Mixer, which will be in May. So we will actually be going to the Catalina Wine Mixer this year.
Hey, so, when are you going? Do you know?
It's the second week of May.
I'll be on Catalina Island on May 13th. So let me know.
Okay. All right. We'll do our own Catalina Wine Mixer. It's the fucking Catalina Wine Mixer.
Maybe you guys can find a drum set.
Put some nuts on it.
We'll have to definitely represent Prestige Worldwide while we're on Catalina. That's for sure. Well, we do want to start wrapping up, but of course we want to thank our good buddy here, Jacob Blunden. Jacob, thank you so much for being on, my friend. Floor is yours. Tell the kids where they can find you, what you got going on, pal.
I just realized Step Brothers is the only Adam McKay movie I've never seen. Anyway, so...
Wait, you have never seen Step Brothers?
Yeah.
Okay. I know you have 300 next week. Now you have 301.
I know. Trust me, the list is a mile long. I watched 40-Year-Old Virgin for the first time like a year ago because Taylor was insistent. She was just like, you sit down now. And we watched 40-Year-Old. I'd never seen. There's a lot of those 2000s comedies that I've just never seen.
Sure.
But yeah, I was looking through his films. And I was like, I've seen every single one of these except Step Brothers. And that's crazy. Anyway. So yeah, you guys can find me pretty much everywhere at Jacob Blunden. This Sunday, though, starting at 6 p.m. PST, Pacific Standard Time, we're bringing the bracket back. Sunday Night Brackets returns with myself, Taylor Robinson, Mara Knopic, Marisol McKee, and Adam Collins. We are going to be doing the 2010s. So we got 287 films. We're going to go through and pick out what the number one movie is over 20 weeks. So over the next 20 weeks, we're going to go through in bracket style and match up movies together. Now, if you have never seen any of my stuff before, we did this back in 2021, where we did it for Inner Geekdom movies. So we went through 287 came because at the time that was every single film that was in the Inner Geekdom segment of the Schmodown. So we picked, we just went through every single one of them and we ended up with Jurassic Park being the number one movie.
Smart.
And we did that over 20 weeks. It was a lot of fun and we're going to do it all over again, but with movies from the 2010s. If you go onto my Twitter at Jacob Blunden right now, you'll see what all 287 films are. we made the strategic decision to not include movies that were part of the Inner Geekdom. Except there's about there's six of them that were, but we kind of were like, yeah, we want these included. So, yeah.
Nice. That sounds like a lot of fun. I bet you
the Get Smart remake wins.
Oh, God. If it does, Jacob, I have lost all faith in you, dude.
No, that's there's quite a few matchups. Anyone who knows me know there's a potential matchup in round two that's going to hurt me specifically very badly, and I'm terrified of it. So yeah, it's going to be fun. It's going to be a lot of anger. There's going to be a lot of friendships being ruined, and we're going to have some special guests through the whole 20 weeks. So make sure you come check us out at the Finely Tailored YouTube channel.
Nice. Please go like, click, and subscribe. Comes out this Sunday, folks. You're definitely not going to want to miss that. Jacob, you're welcome back anytime, buddy. Thank you so much for coming on, man.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a lot of fun. Sorry for hijacking a lot of it.
You're our guest, man. Come on and hijack. Well, folks, we are going to call it a night. Tune in next week. We have a very fun episode coming up next week with Andy Merriweather and Melissa Woody. You know Andy from Settle the Score. We're going to have them on. And because it's a little light in the movie movie theaters right now for movies until the highly anticipated Ghostbusters Frozen Empire comes out. So what we are going to be doing is, much like we did with Matt Nost a few weeks ago, we are going to have a different series of Oscars. This is going to be a horror movie-themed Oscars. So please tune in next week. Thank you for listening. Have a good day.
Good night, everybody. Deep Rising will win Best Picture.
Oh, God.